sometimes in the process of, parenting, or we could also say with all of us, within the process of the Lord shepherding us, the question can come to us is, do we know what we need most? You know, do the people around us, do the friends that we have, do they know what they need most? Do our kids know? So, you know, sometimes there's exhortation, you might say, in our homes. There's encouragement to do certain things because we do know that in the process of growing up, as a young person, there's certain habits and things that need to be established. And you know, so we don't know a lot of those things just naturally. I didn't as I was younger growing up. I needed to be taught certain things, shown certain things, so that I could, you know, just be the person that I needed to be. And it's the same with all of us. But the bottom line is that we don't know what it is that we need to include in our life. And sometimes it's so easy. I know, speaking of myself, it's easy to sort of have an inward look at our situation and ourselves and think that, well, as soon as I get everything taken care of in my own life, as soon as I get everything fixed in my house, then I'll look across to help a neighbor. And I'm not saying that's like wrong in terms of scripture command, but the idea is that along the way, while we're doing the stuff that we need to do and building character traits into our life, we're going to run across people. We're going to be overtaken by others that need a demonstration of the love of Christ right then and there at that moment. And Romans chapter 12 gives us a great example or a great body of teaching about what it is that other people need. And it starts out even, like it says there in Romans chapter 12, as we've managed to work our way through some of these things, you know, Paul is writing, I'm sorry, I was in the wrong 12, is writing the Romans, like we said earlier, who are in a tough situation. And he starts out in verse 9, he says, "Let love be without hypocrisy, abhor what is evil, do what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love and give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints," and like we looked at last week, of practicing hospitality. So there's many things that people need. Some people recognize that they need those things, some people don't. There's some people don't recognize that they need a spirit of diligence, and other people that do not recognize that they need a spirit of diligence, that is something that God looks for and blesses. But even with respect to adversarial situations, what is it that the person needs who is at odds with us? Now, here it is talking about persecution. He's writing Romans, and they're talking about persecution or ill will being planned against them, thought against them, because simply they had placed their faith and trust in Jesus Christ. So, but even though sometimes we say, well, if you're going to be that way, hey, knock yourself out. I'll catch up with you sometime later, you know, a few years later. Maybe things have changed. Or sometimes we say that, you know, we see a person and we meet them a while later and we don't realize all the changes and say, wow, man, look at the differences in that person's life, in his life or her life. But the idea is that, you know, somewhere along the line, God has used himself and his word, his conviction, and he's used other people to help make some adjustments. And, you know, I love that little pin that my mother had as a teacher, you know, one of those little apple things, but on had a picture of an apple in the little lapel pin type of thing, but it has on there, "I make a difference." That is, we make a difference by choosing to make a difference. We make a difference as a believer, as choosing to hang on to the Lord so tenaciously that we can, out of that overflow of what he pours into our life through the truth and the, you know, all the attitudes and the spiritual fruit and stuff like that, we can make a difference in the lives of others. But it says, "Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse." So we engage others with the love of Christ by being a blessing to them. Now, one thing I forgot to mention at the beginning is that I do want you to be thinking of two or three people throughout this whole talk time that we have. You got, whether you know it or not, probably another 28, 30 minutes with me before I shut up. And I want you to come up during that 28, 29 minutes of a name of a person, two or three, that you can apply these things to. This is all about doing. This is not about thinking about people who are super nice to us and they deserve this so much that I will, you know, fall all over myself, so to speak, to get some of this type of demonstration of God's love into their life. No, we're talking about anybody who is around you, and some are the how can you be a blessing to. So it says, engage others with the love of Christ by blessing them, by being a blessing to them. So, in other words, you start thinking of that person who you have in your mind who maybe has some little edginess to them. They are considered to be maybe an irregular person. We'll put that in quotation marks to you. They don't think like you. They don't maybe have the same demeanor as you. Not about personality per se, but, you know, they think different, maybe have some different values than you. And that obviously gets expressed in everyday life. So, again, I'm not saying go out and find some person who's going to have a corrupting influence in your life and be corrupted by them. I'm saying find somebody who has this attitude or some of these issues and figure out a way to be a blessing. That is, hoping for the best instead of the worst to happen. It's easy to say, I'm just biding my time and they'll get what they deserve. But that's not fulfilling what God asks us to do, of bless and do not curse. He's saying take a proactive look at how we can bring some of the blessing that God has brought into our life in terms of things that He's taught us and ways in which He's helped us to grow. And it includes some of these things like praying for, being devoted to in brotherly love, and, you know, smiling, encouraging. Jesus talked about that a lot on the Sermon on the Mount also. Not speaking, instead of speaking words of hatred, like the curse, idea, we choose to speak words of truthful good, you might say. We speak words of God's truth. We speak words to encourage them. Now, sometimes we can do that from a distance, from the distance of an email address. We can do that from the distance of one of the cards that are out there in the little caregiving cabinet that's right outside. You're welcome to take any of those cards and use them. They're already stamped envelopes. You just write the message and put on the address and you're good to go. But it's asking us to make a decision in advance. These are all premeditated things. Plan to bless those who persecute. Plan to bless and do not curse. Bring some of the awareness of God's goodness into their life. In other words, you're going to be speaking about what God has done for you to this person and kind of leaving it there for God to use. This is not about putting somebody, when it says bless and those who persecute you, it's not talking about pinning them down. It's not talking about putting them in a headlock and cranking it a little bit. Wait until their head turns, you know, from red to purple or whatever, and then say something to them encouraging. Is talking about just being an everyday, normal, encouraging person that's talking about what God is doing in your life. Now, again, I know there's choices that are being made. I'm not talking about inappropriate relationship things, and I'm not talking about stepping into areas that are dangerous for you either. But I am talking about where you find some dislike, where you know there's a little bit maybe even of animosity because of your trust in the Lord. Keep looking to do the kind thing. He goes on to the next verse and says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. In other words, engage others with the love of Christ through what we might call genuine empathy. Now, here again, it's saying to rejoice with and to weep with. That is, you're supposed to have a sensitive heart or a sensitive spirit, supposed to be aware of what is going on. Sometimes you can have that awareness just through body language, and you think to yourself, man, you know, this is a happy occasion. Why is such a person looking kind of despondent? And this, you know, is likely going to be a friend of yours, somebody that you know a little bit, that you have a platform already to talk with. So he's talking about, you know, allowing what God has done into your life to affect the life of others. Hebrews 13:3, I don't know if you have something to write that little verse down, but Hebrews 13:3 says, "Remember the prisoners as if chained with them." Isn't that interesting? He's talking about fellow Christians, I think, in this case, in Hebrews 13. But he's talking about, Paul talked also about Aristarchus and some others, who Epaphroditus, who were fellow prisoners in Christ. It doesn't mean that they were chained to the wall like he was between two praetorian guards there in Rome while he was in house arrest, but it does mean that Epaphroditus, Aristarchus, Onesiphorus, those guys, they came and visited him and endured the same, you know, quality of life, the same situation in life, so that they could hang in there and be an encouragement to him and be happy when he's happy. It says that from him and from them, you know, the gospel went through all these different guards and the praetorian guards. Now, these are like special forces of our day. These are people who are, you know, maybe somewhat stoic and you know, measured and reserved in their response. They're hardened on the battlefield, if you will. And Paul, you know, since he has them with a chain leading to each one of them, you know, from his wrist to their wrist, so he doesn't escape, then, you know, he's got an audience, and the guards got to see him cry with other people who were crying over what was going on with other believers in their presence, and they were not prevented from talking about the real life issues, if you will. But, you know, with Jesus, you know what was happening with him emotionally. When he approached the tomb of Lazarus, for instance, what did he do? We think of it as the shortest verse in the Bible, John 11:35, and what does it say? Two words. Jesus wept. That means he wasn't thinking, hey, this is a Comedy Central opportunity, just give me a microphone. And he was thinking about how much he missed Lazarus and how much the, you know, relationship of Mary and Martha as two sisters meant to them, or Lazarus meant to them. There's little daily breads that are on the rack out there. There's Martin DeHaan writes a lot of those little daily breads, and he said we can measure our likeness to Christ by the range of our sensitivity to the sorrow and pain of others. We can measure our likeness to Christ by the likeness, you know, by the range of our sensitivity. In other words, being able to be happy as well as sad, upset when there's a need to be upset, and happy when there needs to be happiness. I like what it also says in Psalm 84. You might write that down, Psalm 84, 5 and 6. It talks about this walking through this valley of Baca. Baca in Hebrew means weeping. And it says, "Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage," that is, pilgrimage for the feast days, for the worship of God. "As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring, and rain also covers it with pools." Now, in some cases, these pilgrims were traveling through this valley with tears coming out of their face, out of their eyes. And it's almost like in the language here that they're watering the ground with the number of tears that they have. Jesus talks about in Psalm 56, or God talks about in Psalm 56, I think it's verse 8, how he is so sensitive to us that he gathers up our tears in a bottle. And over in the Near East, they still make these tiny little bottles that are about yay so high. They're very delicate, and they have a long little stem on them, and they have a tiny little cork that they put, or some kind of stopper in the end of it. And, you know, and they're passed down through generations. And they have that little curled lip on the side, and the women are particularly noted for passing these things on, and they will catch the tears off their cheek and, you know, put the cap on and store it. Now, obviously, things dry out over time and things like that, but you know, over the years, you know, grandmother to mother to grandchild to great-grandchild, all, this little bottle of remembrances of tender times, of joyous times, celebration times, as well as times of grieving are captured in that bottle. And it says Jesus is, or God is so close to us that it's like Him being so close that He cares about gathering up even that tear off of our cheek. It means so much to Him. So in other words, we have to say, you know what, I can set aside some of the things that are going on in my life and empathize with, enter into the life of somebody else. This weeping with people who weep and rejoicing with people requires us to stop what we're doing, doesn't it? It's not something that we turn on and turn off. It's something that we, and some people shy away from. You know, it's great to be at the occasion where we're all hip, 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 ran together, but some people shy away from shedding tears with other people. This requires us to be willing to pray with other people. It requires us to understand and to show that we understand the hardship and situations that they are going to. This is something that, because it's in here for everybody, that God doesn't want us to leave to other people. He wants us to do it because He's telling all of us to have such sensitivity. We don't walk around, "Will you please get a grip?" or "When are you going to get over that?" We highlight, rather, the, "Hey, is there anything I can do? I appreciate this moment, and I appreciate your sensitivity to, or the tenderness that you have towards, and so you're willing to enter into with that kind of sympathy, empathy." He moves on. Verse 16. You can see where it says, "Be of the same mind one towards another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation." And I believe he's talking about engaging others with the love of Christ through expressions of humility. I don't know how many humble people you have around you. I hope you have some. But it is obvious when one of your friends or a person that comes into your life is humble. Because you know where their interests are going to be. They're going to include you as some of the things that they are interested in. They're not always going to be talking about themselves. You know, they're not only going to be always demanding that you just think about their stuff and their issues. They'll be humbly entering into your life as well and willing to associate. Now, this word associate with is a really interesting word in that it describes the movement of things with the flow of an overflowing river. And it's talking about something that's on the bank, and the river overflows and catches that something, that piece of wood or whatever it is. We've seen that happen down in Texas and Oklahoma and other places where there's been these torrential rains, and things just get swept up, and all of a sudden a car is moving. But in this case, it's a good flow, and he's saying be caught up in the life of, or the flow of what is happening in the life of another person. Get caught up in that and join in and serve that person and associate with that person. It's just too easy in our day to say, man, do they have so much baggage in their life? And by doing that, we already have one hand on the doorknob as we are closing them off from us. Because we don't want to be baggage handlers. We want people around us who got all the money they need, who so they're never going to ask us for a dime, who have all their issues, you know, sorted out, who have a nearly perfect family life, and, you know, everybody is happy and getting along, and we always do this, and we have so many wonderful, and there's nothing wrong with family celebrations and wonderful traditions in a family. Those are great. But man, it's also time for us to realize that there's so many around us that have such great need, you know, and they're right here on our doorstep. And I want to encourage you to just keep yourselves aware of, be willing to be vulnerable enough to release or to help other people see the things that you have need of so they can help. And the other side of that is being willing to open your heart. you can call other people up and say, hey, people that you know of in this group, in this assembly that we have, that do cook for other people, that do acts of kindness when things are aware. And you can make sure they seem to be a person that hears about some of this stuff first, because they're the one texting stuff to you. It's that person that you go and make sure they have your name and phone number, your email address, so that, and you tell them, like at least, you know, once a month on a regular basis, please, if you ever find somebody in need that I don't know about, let me know so that I can make something for them, and you're insisting on helping. You gotta love those group of people in this church in Philippi that Paul started. Paul goes through and talks about them in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, somewhere 3, 4, and 5 in there. And he says, they did not do as we expected. They first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us. And it says they insisted, even giving out of their poverty. Paul was ready. He already had the free pass thing printed to hand to them. You have the free pass on this offering because I know you're in poverty. And they insisted, take that and stick it in your pocket, dude. We're given to the saints back in Jerusalem who are suffering through this famine. And they insisted on being a help and part of the blessing. And that's where we can be too if we are humble. I know sometimes when we're out thinking about whether we want to jump into the pool, what do we do with our little toes? Just reach them out there and kind of stick them in the pool, and we say, man, is this the right situation for me to jump into? But sometimes as Christians, it's so easy to get, I know I have been there, get into the habit of, hey, I'll just kind of stick my little toe in there. I'll ask a question. If the question comes back hinting about a bunch of need, the subject gets changed. Instead of diving all the way in, not caring what the answer is, and saying, I'm going to be there for you to help. So what do you do with the woman who showed up on Thursday? Was hoping to get into a battered women's shelter, which means there's some stuff going on in the life. And you think, man, if I ask a question, I mean, there could be easily a list of 20 or 30 things that need to be done. So what? Who cares about that? Just find something on that list of 20 that can be done. And you'll be amazed at how God fills in the rest with other people who can do numbers, you know, 17 through 19 or whatever like that. But just be willing to be open to do your part. Don't think, well, because God brings a needy person into my life and I'm humble and I do want to help, but, oh boy, I heard a little hint that this is going to go towards real needy, so do I really want to be that helpful is the idea. Do I want to come alongside, and if we're humble, he says, to be willing to associate. It's okay to get swept up. And it's obviously talking about doing things with God's strength. The lowly. Don't think yourself too smart. Don't be wise in your own estimation. Sometimes we give ourselves way too much credit for being able to figure the certain situation out and say to ourselves privately, if they would have done this, 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 and this, they wouldn't be in that situation, so why should I help them? Well, we should help them because maybe they haven't been trained. Maybe they don't know how to do those things that are obvious and easy for you to do. Maybe they don't know even how to make out a resume to find a job in the first place. But you do, because you can go click on the internet sites that have the templates there, and you can get the person walking through a situation that gets them or yields them a resume that helps them with the process of finding a job. You see how easy that is? But what does that take? It takes humility, and it takes a bit of the willingness to get kind of swept up for a little bit of time with that. Look down at verse 17. It says that we engage others with Christ's love in another way. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. What is that suggesting that we do? It sounds like something like we're engaging in the love of Christ by offering something good from God even when something bad has been handed to us. And it's so easy. Beverly's not up here to hear this. Now, you guys are not allowed for me to, you know, I don't even know if she knows this to this day, but man, when I was Joe's seminary student, wow, I was really messed up on how to be a husband, even though I was studying the Bible, you know. And I had my little secret book that I didn't keep in my pocket. I wouldn't want to keep it literal in case you found it around, of course, but I would write down in my little book all these instances where I was super kind, a wonderful husband, all these nice things that I thought I was doing when she was out of line a little bit, I thought. Now, so you can already know why I didn't share this with Beverly, because I probably would have got smacked upside the head and probably deserve it to this day. So I would go around thinking, oh, Randy, you're wonderful. I mean, just read this stuff that you got in your book, man. You didn't do this. You didn't do this. You didn't respond with anger here. You didn't get upset here. You sucked it up. You didn't say anything bad here. But what do I have in the end? A bunch of didn'ts. A bunch of silence. What is he talking about here? It says, never pay back evil for evil. What is the exact opposite implication of that? Repay what? If you don't have the option to repay evil, what do you have the option to repay? Good. I mean, it's so obvious to you, isn't it? You could have given me a little marriage counseling back in the day, you know, if we knew each other, you know. Back in the 80s, you know, as we were getting started with this whole business. But I'm telling you, friends, I was congratulating myself. And then I also, on a couple of occasions, gave myself permission because I had so much of this I didn't do stuff piled up in my plus, in what I thought was my plus column. I justified getting angry with her and hollering. Now you're thinking, boy, you are so off base. Please, and I'm glad we didn't have any tomatoes in your hands or something when you were coming in today. And I'm not asking you to think, you know, any positive thoughts to me at this point. But all I am saying is that sometimes we get caught up into this whole idea of well, I withheld evil. So that's the only thing that we're talking about here. I didn't do the wrong thing. I wasn't showing animosity when everybody else, you know, in quotation marks, might have shown animosity, when they would have countered with a little sharp comment, put the burr under the saddle, just like a burr was put under my saddle, for the sake of intentional irritation. You irritate me, I'll irritate you. You come home late so I can't get to my thing on time, I'll come home purposely late so that you don't get to your stuff. Now, is that... Seems like Randy was skipping some parts of the Bible. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. So with you, I've just told you what I did in the wrong way. All of you have already figured out what the right thing to do is in the sight of all people. It wasn't what I was doing. So God had to change me through a series of things to get me back into humility land and to repent of that attitude and that stuff, and to run that little book out of that I pulled out of my ear into the shredder, because he reminded me of, if you want me to treat you the same way you're treating Beverly, guess who's going to end up with the bigger book and the more judgment coming down? It's going to be you, Randy, not her. So the idea of be ready to overflow with offering something that is good from God. He goes on to say in verse 18, if possible, as far as it depends upon you, make peace with all men. Now, that verse does not say it's going to be possible to live peacefully with everybody. But as far as what comes out of your life, you're going to say, hey, I can engage other people with the love of Christ by being a peacemaker. And that's a wonderful thing. This is something that is not passive, but is active. It's one of those things where we realize early on we can't control other people, but what can we control? Ourselves. That's why it says one of the fruits of the Spirit is to be, right there at the end, be self-controlled, and then it adds at the end of that little phrase, against such there is no law. That is, there's no law of God that prevents us from being self-controlled. Or, you know, offering all those other things. But it talks about living peacefully. It's not talking about being a crusader. every one of us. And I know there's entire denominations given over to finding fault with what everybody else does. But we are not called as a church to go say, we're going to add to the list and start writing down the faults of every other religious group or whatever on our walls. And so we can clearly identify for everybody here what's wrong with those guys. Our job is to figure out a way to live peaceably. Now, again, it's not talking about compromising doctrinal truth or anything like that. But it is talking about saying, hey, be aware of the fact that there is going to be conflict. Because we know that Satan loves to mess with your mind. You might remember, some of you, Yitzhak Rabin, who was quoted as saying, peace is not made with friends. Peace is made with who? With enemies, right? So if we're going to be peacemaker, then we already know that, hey, there's something that is amiss. We love in the love of Christ or with the love of Christ when we have a winsome, when we not root people out or root wrong things out and beat somebody senseless. That's not called peacemaking. It's not about being right. It's not about having a better idea. It's not about doing what's most efficient. It's about doing what Jesus would do. You can find all kinds of people who are less organized than you, who don't handle themselves, you know, and some things are not wise, and you can spend all day long criticizing that person for what they're doing. They're obviously not getting it, blah, blah, blah. Or you can say, I'm going to bring peace into that person's life. I'm going to pass over that bridge of forgiveness, and I'm going to minister. We'll just do one last one there in verse 19. It says, never take your own revenge, beloved, but make room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. And so just, you know, you let God do the correction. You don't have to show the correction. And then in verse 20, it says, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you heap burning coals upon the person's head. That is, they are convicted all the more. You know how in the ancient Near East, there's women who would walk around, people who walk around with these little pans that they used to carry things, like food, like, you know, laundry or whatever it is. So if you put burning coals upon that little metal pan, what do they feel on the top of their head? A very clear burning sensation. But that's not, you know, and they're very much aware of what's going on up there, that something is heating up. In this case, it's the idea of they become more aware of the fact that God is working. And that they need to be convicted as you do something that's kind and helpful to the person who is even at odds with you. So I want to encourage you to think about active benevolence. I want to encourage you to think about who is that person that's on my list. Who are three people? Maybe you've seen the little Pay It Forward little movie with the young kid who starts by his class project, writing down the names of three people. And he anticipates those three people finding their own set of three people. So it turns from 3 to 9. From 9 to what? 27. What's 27 times 3? Something. 81, whatever it is. Then, you know, you can just see how it starts multiplying exponentially. So you have received. This passage is saying there just absolutely must be somebody, at least one, maybe three, in all of our lives that we are paying forward what God is investing in our life. If there are not at least three people, then find three people and get consumed with the idea of how much you can offer. I'm telling you, your life will be not a bowl of cherries, but you will be satisfied and happy and thankful and appreciative and those kind of things. And you know, so glad that somebody, whether you were in poor situations or opulent situations, that somebody taught you how to live, how to do things, how to be protected from the influence of the bad and so on, and how he gave you some common sense, some mechanical ability so you can do things and fix things, but there's other people around you that need how to learn how to do that too. So we say to ourselves, I'm going to pay this forward. I'm going to not let anything or any situation keep me from showing the love of Christ back to them. You got your three people? Do not leave here without three people's names in mind. And do something this week with one of those three, if not more, to make something happen. Do not let yourself off the hook. I don't think that God is going to let you off the hook. I know that those years when I was messed up as a husband, God was not letting me off the hook. Let's bow in prayer.